Could the answer to bullying be martial arts? Could it be that simple? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Once again, Anchorage schools are benefiting from some anti-bullying expertise. And what we'd like to do is let the whole state in on it. Our number toll-free, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@aprn.org. It's bullying today on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
Oh, boy. It's time for this thing that Dennis Maloney does every year for the last few years because he's taken up this cause of bullying in the schools. And Dennis is an attorney at law practicing in Anchorage. And Dennis, you basically, this kind of started out with legal action, right, Dennis?
Yes, probably the least exciting.
Well, there goes the phone. That's probably me.
The least exciting thing. Yeah, the case I didn't want, the case that nobody wanted. How this started was I used to go to Romano's after work and maybe have a drink or eat. And there was an engineer that would show up there who was kind of a quiet guy. And he wasn't a friend of mine, but I met him there. It was kind of like the after work watering hole. One day he came to me. And he came to my office and he said, Dennis, you've got to help me. He grabbed me by the shirt, sort of, and a desperate look on his face. And he said, you've got to help me. I said, what happened? He says, my son hanged himself, but he didn't die. And I've been to 8 lawyers and nobody will take the case. And the statute of limitations is going to run in 3 days. And he said, Primera won't pay for his health care, Blue Cross, because it was a self-inflicted injury. He hanged himself. And I said, wow. And then he said, he told me the story, and it's just so sad and so awful. He says, will you help me? And I said, sure. I've always been tilting at windmills for pretty much my political
career. I've noticed this about you.
So have I. And legal life. But my card said litigator for the little people, so I took up causes where I didn't make money, and a lot of the cases I had over my career didn't make any money, but there were bigger cases that paid for the little cases, and so I sort of felt it's always a civic duty to try to help people. And so we took his case, and what had happened was his son, who was literally 87 pounds when he went into seventh grade, a little guy, probably had what was then called Asperger's syndrome, which is probably what Bill Gates has. What happens is it's now part of the autism spectrum, they call it. And autism is, as you know, rampant in America. There's one out of every 88 boys now has it in America, they figure. And he was at the upper end. Bill Gates is at the upper end. A lot of doctors at the upper end. We've seen people who are very socially inept, but are very bright. People who don't even see people, who don't, even as babies, they find these people don't look people in the eyes. They don't pick up social cues. They are in another world. The fact that the autism lets them focus so much turns some people into people who are bouncing their head against a wall and end up institutionalized. And the other end of the spectrum, you end up with these geniuses like Gates and this kid. The kid had a math IQ of 177. He was born with a little bit of a birth defect, so he walked with a limp. And when he went into seventh grade, he was in Civil Air Patrol, which is a geeky thing to do. What junior high school kid, goes out Saturday, puts on a blue uniform, and marches around with a bunch of other kids. But he was in that, and he wanted to improve his running speed despite his limp. So he went out for track in seventh grade at Central Junior High.
Naturally, he came in last. The coach called him a slackard. The other kids start calling him a slackard. Shortly thereafter, he became a target of bullying because he was just totally socially inept. And the first time they attacked him in a bathroom, was about six of them. Sons of prominent people, prominent professionals in Anchorage, were part of the bullying group. And then there were one or two people who were not from the right side of the tracks, but, you know, they sort of pushed the issue. Anyway, he got beat up, and he got suspended for being beaten up, bruised and kicked and welts on him, because the Anchorage School District, like most school districts in the country, find it difficult to decide who starts a fight, so they suspend everybody involved. Well, that is a necessity in some situations because it's a he said, she said kind of thing. But this kid became a target. He was suspended 12 times in seventh grade. His science teacher, who was teaching him to do hammerhead maneuvers in an open cockpit airplane in seventh grade, went to this vice principal in charge of discipline and said, you know, he's coming into my room for protection at lunch. This cold-hearted woman who I think the ASD then promoted to some other school, said he brings it on himself. His mother went down and made the plea for him. His father went down and made the plea for him. He was continually bullied. And at some point, you have to make an investigation. You know, once maybe, twice maybe, three. But this kid is a target. And it was pretty plain for me to see that.
I'm afraid we could use the whole show with this.
I'll speed it up. All right. So anyway, eighth grade.
I'm loving it, though.
Between seventh and eighth grade, he learned how to fly a glider and learned Fortran programming at UAA. So his parents said, you don't want to go back. He said, well, I'm not going to let these bullies deny me my education. He goes back. In early November, his mom picks him up. He says, Mom, I was standing next to a teacher when Jimmy slammed me into the lockers and down on the floor, so I'm not going to be suspended. An hour later, his dad got a call. He was being suspended again. His mom went shopping the next day, came home, found him hanging, apparently lifeless. They cut him down. They revived some of him. He was left with what's known as an anoxic event, which is what you call it when you cut off oxygen to the brain. He was left with a reptilian brain, which means you're just left with your essential functions. As your core shuts down, you retain the ability to digest food and breathe and see and that sort of thing, but your higher intellectual functions go. That's what happened to him. He's now fed through a feeding tube in his stomach. His mother changes his diaper every day, and he's a shadow of his former self. He still could recognize me and say my name, you know, after he met me, and he would, but he limps around, and it was sad. Anyway, we took on Primera. They agreed to pay their $1 million policy out plus $250,000 spanking money. And they agreed to change it. So now everybody with a Blue Cross policy, if it's a self-inflicted injury, it's covered. I mean, who in their right mind tries to kill themselves, right? So then we went after the school district, and we ended up getting a $4.5 million settlement out of the school district. I took $250,000 of my fee. First of all, in the first part of the case, I reduced my fee from $450,000 to $50,000 because the family needed the health insurance a lot more than I did. And then we went after the school district, and we won, and I got a big fee, and I spent $250,000, roughly, putting on the first North American anti-bullying conference, and we found the top nine people in North America, one Canadian and eight Americans, brought them to Anchorage, gave them all a cruise. These people had never met together in one place. It was the first conference in North America. We put on a three-day presentation down at the PAC. It was free. The Boston School District sent two, Quebec sent two, Dallas sent two. Matsu sent 44, Kotzebue sent four, Ketchikan sent four. The Anchorage School District sent one observer. I was not their favorite person at that point. And we made some DVDs, including one that Dr. Twemla, who's with us today, did. And the largest educational publishing house in the country picked them up. They're now in about 140 school districts, and you can buy them online and at Amazon.com. We've continued to have, I made friends with Dr. Twemlo and with some of the other speakers, including Dorothy, who's coming here today also. And we've had some other sessions. This one is the biggest, I hope not the last session that we have. We're going to video this one, and I think it'll be a bestseller, considering now bullying is a big deal all over the country. Dr. Twemlo is one of the brightest people I've ever met, perhaps the brightest person. He's from New Zealand. He's half Maori. He was abandoned young by his mother and adopted by a elementary school principal who raised him until she died when I think he was 12. He survived all of that, became a teacher, Then paid his way through medical school playing poker, as I understand it, and then became a surgeon, came to the United States, became a psychiatrist and a psychoanalyst, and he's been with the Menninger Clinic over 40 years. He is perhaps the top psychiatrist in the country. I think he is the top. There are people who come in jets to visit him. Anyway, he started a program in Jamaica about 25 years ago, which has continued, Jamaica being the most violent place in the world, and he'll tell you about that. And he also did his program to reduce violence in schools was tested statistically, which no other program has ever been tested statistically. And they did it in the Topeka schools, among other things. After 3 years of double-blind study, his program produced substantial reductions in violence and an increase in test scores of 9%. So this, you know, we talk about how can you improve test scores? Well, let's see. If somebody's not picking on you and you're not looking over your head and the teacher isn't dealing with discipline, guess what happens in the classrooms? Education. With that, that's about all I have to say.
Thanks, Dennis. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about bullying, and Dennis has founded this organization by bullies, that is what is bringing these people into town, including Dr. Stuart W. Twemlow, who, among other things, practices at Baylor, the Menninger Clinic, and also was called in during the Columbine thing as a consultant. And, you probably didn't get to hear how I started the show, but I said, could it be so simple as that martial arts is the answer to bullying? And I understand that you actually do use martial arts. If you go and work at school, this is part of your thing. Maybe you can tell me how that works.
I can, but let me preface everything I say by telling you that I'm saying something oversimplified. This is no longer a matter of do this and everything will get better. If you want to talk about that, I'm going to talk about it tonight. This is immensely complex. It's not just a matter of taking a bully and reforming him, which is something like the whole idea of prisons being used to reform prisoners. As you know, that was a failure. And any bullying program that addresses bullies and tries to reform them, with or without martial arts, will be a failure. Actually, our last book was called Why School Anti-Bullying Programs Don't Work. There isn't actually one of them that works properly. Now, Dennis is a friend of mine, and he's never prone to exaggeration at all.
No.
As you know. And I only wish I could...
This never comes in handy in a courtroom.
I only wish I could claim the results that he indicated. Now, back to martial arts. Martial arts is an avocation of mine and my family. I have five children. Four of them have black belts. One of them is a full-time martial artist. That's what he does for a living. So we like it. And what we found was when we began volunteering in schools in the early part of the 1990s that little kids love martial arts because it gives them a feeling of being much bigger than they are. Because remember, martial arts started with little people, and it gives them magical powers, just like in the Kung Fu movies. So we used martial arts to hook them, really. It's sort of like bait on a fishing line. And once they got into the idea of defensive martial arts, we didn't teach them to kick and punch and hurt people. We taught them things like how to fall without breaking your wrist, how to manage a body slam, how to handle a problem if a kid grabs you by the wrist or pushes or pulls you, and also how to use your voice and how to watch when people are going to be attacking you. And we used it also to role play bully victim and the very important bystander role. Dennis mentioned one of the videos put out was something I did on the bystander. This is the audience that keeps this whole process going. It's all of us, actually. And these role plays really essentially teach children how to handle a bully. And then they get a little activity. As you know, little kids like activity. And so we use it. Now, if we were in a high school, would we use it? Not at all. If you go down to the Anchorage High School, you may find a martial arts club, probably not. By that time, kids are interested in girls, booze, and drugs. In middle school, would you use it? No, probably not, because by then it's football, baseball, basketball. And that's the time you start to have bully fathers coaching. And that's where you need to focus your effort, wherever the kid is. So that's how martial arts came into the picture. A few people like me remain childlike the rest of their lives, and at age 70, I'm still doing martial arts. That's how we got involved.
Let me ask you this. What about the girls?
You know what? In the research Dennis alluded to, which was a randomized study with very careful attention to measurement and consistency, it cost $1 million to do. If I had that $1 million, would I do it again? Probably not. Because the way you assess these things in science, the causal models are changing so quickly. The randomized control trial model is really starting to fade in power. But if I had that to do over again, I probably wouldn't do that thing. But it was worth doing at the time.
If you got a grant from somebody like the Rasmussen Foundation, could you do something in Anchorage, do you think?
Very much so. See, what we do is this. We go in with ad marketing people, not motivational psychologists, ad marketing. I've got a program just started in Houston, Texas, which has got a waiting list of 20 schools. We're starting off with 5. Run by two mothers who got really sick of their kids being bullied. It's a grassroots thing, and they call it positive works. Well, frankly speaking, as an old psychoanalyst, I'm not that positive. As you know, I love negativity. Like Freud, who first, in his first Latin class, translated Malleus Maleficarum, while Jung was translating alchemy. Negativity fascinates me. However, these two mothers are positive thinking, and I'm learning a great deal about how to be positive from them. Now, you might say, why am I learning? Because I'm the program director that tells them what to do. No, I'm not. What we learned from that first huge, I won't say waste of money, was this. You cannot create a program for a school. The school must create its own program. Every school, even within a district, is different. Teachers don't like to be told what to do. I've learned that from 20 years of working with teachers and being a high school teacher myself before going to medical school. I know teachers. So you will go in there with a program and they will say, very, very good job. Did a great job, Mr. Maloney. We've never heard anything as good as that. And they won't do a thing about it. The first thing you do with schools is you don't come in as an expert. You come in as an ignorant sort of interested person, like a mother. And you sit down with teachers and you say, do you have a problem here? And they say, we don't know. Then you can find that out. We have surveys you can do. And then let's say a problem emerges. And you say, well, how are we going to solve that? We actually spent with the first school 6 months in just a process of saying to teachers, how do you solve this? And they would say, well, you're the experts. Why don't you solve it? And we say, we're the experts, but you're the ones in the front line. Why don't you think about it? And we found out that to make a program work, you have to have a very bought-in person, somebody who has a real passion for it, somebody who thinks about it at night, dreams about it, gets up in the morning and starts working on it. And in a school, that person's invaluable because they get what we call buy-in. Once you have buy-in, once you have everybody talking about the need for an anti-bullying program, you've already started the process. We wrote this book that has 10 background elements that tell you what to do to set your school up for a program. It's not a program, it's a method. Or just say it's a framework. And if you set it up that way, I say, and I don't know this, you could take the worst anti-bullying program in the world and it would work.
Buy-in. It seems like what we're really dealing with is a culture. Like, for instance, you brought up about the bystanders.
Yep.
And clearly, you got your cliques. You know,
that's
any
right.
Any class going to have your cliques. It's going to have your ins and your outs. And then it's going to have that point where somebody sees advantage in diminishing someone else. right. in the eyes of others. And the minute the others are not seeing it that way, it ain't going to work.
Exactly. You got it. Now, you see, if you were on a school, if you were a school teacher, you had that click in your mind. You say, now I get it. See? I have to put my attention not on the bully, not on the victim, but on the rest of the group. And you said school culture. You couldn't have picked a more perfect term. It's the school culture that has to change. Is that simple? No. When I said at first this was complicated, that's what I meant. Changing a culture is complicated. We call it a marathon, not a sprint. I would say a minimum of 3 years. We ask schools to sign up for 3 years.
Well, I'll tell you what does it. The minute there's a common goal,
yep.
And you mentioned this in your word, but the minute, like if the school were actually under threat from outside
right.
or something, and you got everybody pulling together so the school would survive, probably a lot of these other
dynamics
would just plain disappear.
Yeah, and let me tell you how we started, because you triggered this. You triggered this memory. We started off, I had been in Jamaica working with a very, very corrupt police force in another project. And I came back, and this principal of elementary school heard a talk I gave, and he asked me to come and look at his school. Half black, half white, 80% free lunches, which means Medicaid on welfare, 50% single parent families. The highest out-of-school suspension rate in the whole school district, the poorest academic achievement. It was a chaos. So we went into this school, Ross Elementary School. I've never forgotten this. That school today is still a school so quiet, if you went into it, you'd think it had closed down for the day. It looks beautiful. It's a school where the black kids outperform the white kids academically, and that's very, very unusual. It's been peaceful now for nearly 20 years. We piloted that school because a second grade girl accused a bunch of boys in the same grade of rape. And those seven or eight boys were convicted of sexual assault, or at least removed from the school. So it was an extremely violent school. And it became nonviolent. Now, here's what happened. That incident, like Columbine, not as bad, obviously, as Columbine, didn't result in death, but did result in a very scared little girl. And harmed. That incident motivated the staff. But I remember the time when everything settled down and things were going more smoothly. The staff said, well, I'm not sure we want this anymore. Everything's fine now. The kids are gone. They've all been moved to other schools. She's okay. The school's better. Let's stop. And I said, no way. You signed me up for 3 years and I'm staying with you. And essentially, the follow-through is what people don't want to do because it's sort of boring, you know? I mean, you know the stuff, and you're doing it. It has to get like brushing your teeth, something you do every day. You don't even think about it. You just have an anti-bullying atmosphere. This group in Houston call it Positive Works. At first, I thought it's a little bit too positive for a psychoanalyst. It's positive thinking, Seligman stuff. I don't buy into that totally, but what I've been able to do with them is make them more negative so that they bring in the stuff that has to be dealt with. And so what we have is a positive and a negative balance here.
Uh-huh. So I'm almost viewing I'm almost viewing this situation where there's propaganda posters up in the classroom.
Right.
And where nobody is taking him seriously.
Yeah.
And you're saying, you know, over the long haul, people do take them seriously.
If they do take them seriously, there's several things needed. One, the kid has to understand them and speak about them as if they thought of them. Everybody has to understand them. And the way you understand things is by repetition.
And well, that's pretty simple. Yeah. I guess teachers know that part.
Absolutely. Every day, the bully victim bystander stuff, and let's just call it mind-mindedness, empathizing, and resilience, bounce back, comes into every class. A math teacher, actually, he was teaching calculus. in one school managed to do it, and I wish I could remember how he did it because it doesn't seem to fit with math. But wherever possible, language arts is an obvious thing. You could always bring it in. And if you have, as you say, propaganda posters around the classroom, there's always some kid who says, oh, that sounds like a bully. At the end of each day, we ask teachers to have a period of reflection time. The last 10 minutes of the day, the buzzer goes, all teaching stops, and the teacher says, what was the day like? The kids discuss the bully victim bystander piece of it, whether or not they were understanding and empathic to their friends, whether they were able to help somebody, the sort of things little kids do. And then they decide to put out a banner if they had a good day. So what that does is it's called reflection time. And reflectiveness, the act of reflecting, is immensely therapeutic. By the way, not only for children, but also adults.
You know, if you... You know, I know your field's, you know, psychology, psychiatry, and not anthropology, but we'll often see this in many cultures where there's a period where, you know, everybody hangs out around the fire and talks it all over until they all have the same story about it, you know?
Yep.
And it's sort of, it's not really set into the culture until they've done that. You know, in the potlatch culture, it's become all ritualized even to where, you know, it's everybody comes to dinner and they're kind of bribed to come to dinner, but they're all going to agree on what the story is. It's going to go on a totem pole.
Yeah. You know, in a much more westernized form of that, I think it's exactly the same thing. We do this, and we're starting to do it. I'm going to a chair of a division of prevention and mental health in Kansas City shortly, and what we're going to do there is bring people together who share similar problems, but are on different pages about them. They see each other as roles, not people. They see the work economically, not humanistically. And they fight each other, usually in city council meetings. And what we're gonna do with them, and this, we've piloted this in Jamaica, and it works. We bring together the key players in a city that keeps it functioning. I'm gonna talk some about this tonight at this 7 to 9 meeting.
Yeah, that is the Stop the Bullying, Who's the Bully? Three Secrets to Stop Bullying, which is happening this evening, 7 to 9 p.m. at East High School in Anchorage. And we're speaking with Stuart W. Twemlow, Professor of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Baylor College of Medicine, and here for these bullying events. There's something also, Dennis, right, coming up around noon today?
We're going to be over at Lumen Christi and Dorothy.
Is that today or tomorrow?
That's tomorrow. We're going to do it tomorrow at Lumen Christi at noon.
Oh, okay. You don't have to go blasting off to something?
We're kind of in the relaxed mode today. Yeah, Stuart came in. His plane was late. He got in at 1:30 in the morning. Yeah. I had to go over to another radio station and fill in for him this morning. But I let him sleep. He needed to sleep even more than I did. We also have to support this, of course, which is important, our jazz concert. When this is, again, the second year we're bringing up Rick Braun and Jeff Golub, and we have
still... I know they had a good time, and so they're coming back.
They're coming back. We fed them Alaskan oysters from Ketchumek Bay last year, and I think, I don't know how many dozen those guys ate, but when I I've sort of become friends with Jeff. Rick is also a friend because he has an autistic daughter and I have an autistic son, so we have that binding going on. But when I said to Jeff, you know, I read about the red tide in New York, and the Long Island oysters are not being consumed now, and he lives back there, and I said, you know, you want some fresh oysters? Come on, do another concert for us. And he agreed to come up.
So this is a benefit concert at the Performing Arts Center in Anchorage, the Atwood.
That starts at 7. We were going to do it on Friday, but the community choir was rehearsing, so we couldn't get the hall Friday.
So it's
Wednesday night, tomorrow night. And I tell you what, if you go to this concert and you don't like it, I'll give you your money back. We even brought Soul Man Sam, who used to be in Anchorage, who's now in Santa Fe. I brought him up for it from Santa Fe to do some of the opening. He'll be actually singing probably one song at our conference tonight to give you a sample of his voice if you've never heard him. He's amazing. He's an a cappella, and just an amazing and very nice man who played at our first
Bye Bye Billy's conference for free. He and his band played a couple times.
Oh, that's so great, bringing back Soul Man Sam. Well, let's talk of Alaska, and we're getting around to bullying, and I want to go into cyberbullying here with Dr. Twemlow when Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
Got so swept up into it, I forgot to give out the phone number. 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. We're privileged to have with us an anti-bullying expert, Stuart Twemlow, and also Dennis Maloney, an Anchorage attorney and founder of the Bye Bye Bullies program. And basically, once a year, he brings these experts into town, and they're here, and they have the various workshops and public presentations and media appearances, and that's what we're doing right now, and it's really been fascinating. Dr. Twemlow is certainly a hands-on kind of anti-bullying expert who says there is no real formula. You got to get the buy-in, but I want to go to this. Well, the first thing, I still need the answer to the question about the girls and the martial arts, because I started out with
it. Oh, you did, and I didn't answer it.
And you know, I'm thinking. I mean, you sort of answered it in saying, well, it's just the young ones. When they get older, they're not going to look at martial arts in a really constructive way for bullying. But when they're young and they learn that they can defend themselves and all this is, and they learn to watch. And I think anyone knows it goes deep into any of these martial arts, that the observation, you know, the meditational part of it. I mean, it's really nothing without it. Okay, so what about the girls?
Okay. Here's what we found. We studied the group of kids that did martial arts training. We call it gentle warrior. The impact on girls was zero. The statistical impact was entirely on boys. And what it did was it made them helpful bystanders. Now, what that means is altruistic, less aggressive, more likely to help a victim if they see somebody being bullied than they were before. And it also reduced significantly their capacity to victimize other kids. We're talking here about K through 5. Why K through 5? The earlier you get kids with this stuff, the better. We're now working in preschools. I hate to say it, but by high school, it's almost too late. Middle school, it's almost too late. You got to get this stuff very early in so it becomes part of the way kids respond. Now, compare that statistical finding with the way the teachers of martial arts saw it. They saw by far the biggest impact on wallflower girls in the third grade who would not stand up for themselves. And after martial arts training became so asserted, the teachers thought they were mentally ill. So here we have statistics and observation in clash again.
Yes, we do. You got a theory?
Yes, I do, but you don't want to hear it.
Oh, really? Okay.
It really is. It has to do with what cause-effect is in science.
Hmm.
The sort of way you assess these things is a statistic based on probabilities, and I'm not sure this is a simple I push that and it moves thing.
No.
It's very complex, and there's a type of theory now emerging from coherence theory or chaos theory that talks about emergence from a symmetrical, chaotic system, which isn't cause-effect. It just sort of plops up. And I have a feeling science in 100 years will be very different scene, because essentially the typical statistics catch the middle 50%. You know, the right, Gaussian right. curve? You get that group of kids. The 25% on the two outsides, they're not covered.
Yeah.
Okay. Dorothy is going to be big on cyberbullying.
Yeah.
And
this is Dorothy Esplage.
Esplage. She's a firecracker, although she's starting to get tired because she's doing is running around the country making presentations now. She was the youngest full professor the University of Illinois ever had. She's been on Oprah 4 times. She's been on all the national TV programs. She'll talk about cyberbullying tonight and tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be an emphasis on that. We're doing DVDs. The Anchorage School District wants to use them to train its teachers. I am so happy we finally... Mm-hmm. We actually took a picture of Carol Coleman and I shaking hands and holding the poster.
I'm so happy.
You know, burying the hatchet, which
right.
you know, nobody thought we could ever do. But you know, I told her she's a bigger person than I am, and that physically, obviously, that's not true. I mean,
no. Yeah, but she's been on the show several times. This is the first time for Dennis Maloney, however. So it's kind of a pleasure to have you on here.
Thank you.
And of course, as you know, she is deeply concerned about the raw materials that are brought to the school can be quite the problem. In other words, increasingly there's problems at home. There's kids that both parents have to work, and they're taken
That's
to school
right.
early, and the school doesn't have the money to do anything or even to supervise them early. They're building that culture even at that age,
mm-hmm.
and generally speaking, the school is getting a lot of things to handle that it might not once. Probably it was once in the domain of other parts of the culture, the parents and so forth.
Absolutely.
And extended family. And now it falls on the school district, you know, and people are just, some things they just haven't learned.
It's pretty pathetic. You know, what's happened in America, and my simplified view, which is obviously simplified, is that we've lost.
I want to say something about cyberbullying.
Okay. All right. No sense of community. We need a sense of community.
Amen.
Now, listen, you asked me about cyberbullying.
Yes.
And I want to say a couple of things that will be fairly unpopular about it. One is, it's nothing different to deal with cyberbullying than to deal with bullying. It is a culture issue. It's a technical issue. What happens with cyberbullying is children have access to very quick information systems. And they have access to it when teachers don't know that it's happening. Children know more about cyberbullying and more about the internet than adults ever will. Two of the school shootings were designed on school computers that had firewalls up to prevent them from accessing weapons websites. The big thing is to realize what adults don't know, not to make your name selling cyberbullying programs, because those programs are no different than any other programs. They're what you call the school culture. Now, what is different about cyberbullying is this. When you take a bunch of kids and you inundate them with information of any sort, it could even be as simple as somebody talking too quickly, their minds will zone out. They'll cease to listen to you, and they'll develop a phase where they have no sense of privacy. They have no personal space, no time to think. When that happens, their capacity to regulate themselves, excuse me, particularly things like control of anxiety. And if you have a lot of anxiety, you have ADHD. You can't concentrate because your mind is all over the place. You can't regulate yourself because you're so busy texting, sexting, being in touch through various forms of secret. Now iPods can do all of this stuff. All of this stuff is inundating you, so your capacity to regulate yourself goes down. So programs that create a structure that encourages self-regulating, which is the stuff we're talking about, will work with cyberbullying. It's been presented as a brand new thing, but what's brand new is really technical. If you focus your attention, I suspect you've got a big anthropological basis to you. if you focus your attention on the culture and you get everybody on the same page about it, including parents as well as teachers, even down to the school janitor, if you get everybody working on the same page, cyberbullying will come into proper perspective as one more scientifically new technological advance that may be exceeded by something else in the near future. Who knows?
Well, yeah, one thing that does happen is that you can be anonymous. So a person, that's not the case in a physical bullying usually. You can kind of choose your witnesses and stuff like that.
Oh, you can do that in face-to-face bullying. The bullying that's harmful is not physical, okay? People often say that middle school is when bullying stops because it's in middle school that kids bully physically. The worst bullying occurs in high schools. And you don't know who's bullying you. It's a rumor. Rumors are probably the most pernicious of all forms of bullying.
I see what you're saying. So in that sense, then, cyberbullying is just more of the same.
It's more of the same.
Yeah.
In a rumor, you can make up whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. Ostracizing, keeping people from joining the in-group. Who knows who makes that decision?
The other aspect that we assume it's anonymous, but as we know, the FBI knows how to find you.
Oh, yeah.
And it may be, and the police know how to find you. You know, that's how they get the kiddie porn people. There's no such thing as an anonymous email. I mean, even if it's going through some redirection, you can, if you really want to spend the time and money, find the source. Now, that may be something which the community needs to build. The police have over there people already doing that. The FBI has people doing that in town. I was involved in a civil thing on that recently, and we found the person who originated the bad messages coming out of Fairbanks. But it took a little bit of while. And if you can find the anonymous bully, you can sue them. And then you have a record in the court forever.
Let me, Dennis, play devil's advocate with you there.
Dr. Twemlow.
You are talking about a very expensive, very time-consuming process. Now, I believe we have 50 to 80,000 schools in this country. There's no way we're going to be able to follow that up. It's going to have to be done by creating what you call a school culture, in which doing stuff like that isn't done or is done. Let me say, there is a type of bully. We call them true bullies. They're psychopaths. 60 to 70% of them will end up in trouble with the legal system by the time they're 25. Every school will have about 1% of the child population will be those kids. They don't feel things very much. They have a lot of callousness about them. And they don't feel the sort of things that other people feel. And, I mean, very frankly and directly to you, public schools are not good for kids like that. It harms those kids. And those kids are not good for public schools. They need psychiatric care. And that's where they should go. If you leave a psychopath in a school, you've got trouble. One psychopath can bring a school to its knees. That is not where most of the bullying goes on.
I know Dennis is going to agree with you on that. Let's go to Pam, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Pam.
Thank you. Good morning, and kia ora. I have a question on some of the findings of an anthropologist who's been studying social media, particularly with adolescents. And she was finding that quite a number of high schoolers are not recognizing bullying as occurring, but they do have a way of discriminating drama in their lives. And in other words, they're having a very different way of organizing what happens to them and who's responsible.
Fascinating.
And I was wondering if they have found that in their own studies there.
bullying doesn't
mean much with teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the word itself, if you trace back its meaning, it's very obscure. The original bullies were actually positive. They were swashbucklers who took care of the weak and the pretty women and made their name by being brave and attacking the attackers. And over hundreds of years, the word now means a sort of a nasty person. I personally would very much like to drop the word completely, because my feeling is the bully of the type I call psychopathic is very rare. The majority of bullying is a social process that goes on in the school that comes from the culture of the school not being properly functioning. I'm very interested in what you said. I'd like to hear more about that study, because I do think children at high school can solve this problem themselves. They actually listen more to each other than they do to parents or anybody else that's adult. And that those sort of ideas that bullying may be some sort of a drama queen who can be managed in another way, I think would be an excellent way of looking at bullying, because I think each school can come up with new ideas that will help us look at this problem.
I agree, and I think it also makes it easier to fit in with the particular school or the community.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman who's been doing this is Dr. Dana Boyd. She's with Microsoft, and she's actually – go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, interesting, Microsoft produces more than computers.
Well, yes, and she was hired as an anthropologist to look into what the social media is, but she's been talking directly with younger people to try and understand how indeed they are using social media and other means of communication.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
and I'll look that up.
So it's a more of an emic approach, that is, from the viewpoint of the people actually involved.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, of course, that's quite different from what other people might think.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks for that one, Pam. That is mm-hmm. really great. Let's go to Rachel, joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dr. Twemlow.
Hi. How are you?
Pretty good.
I had a question, primarily because I have studied martial arts since I was little.
Oh, really?
And yes, for some reason, this all started because I am a bully magnet. For some reason, boys love to bully me, more than girls, in fact.
Yeah.
And even now into my adulthood, especially because 2 weeks ago it happened, and I've noticed that every time I stand up for myself, I either get retribution from the teacher or retributions from the bully and his friends.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have in your program how to deal with that retribution?
You know what? I tell you, there are some people who are triggered by anybody that asserts themselves. It's like a red flag to a bull, you know? Macho men get their sense of strength from doing that sort of thing. I tell you what I'd have to do. I'd have to see you in a mm-hmm. setting like that. You may be doing something unconsciously, something non-verbally, that brings their attention to you. For example, when you go into a setting, let's say with a lot of men that are of the macho type, do you have any conscious awareness of being scared of them?
No, not at all. In fact, I am pretty much not scared of anybody.
See, here's the issue. I had a karate student years ago who was like that. He came to the school because he constantly was in fights. He never provoked them, he said. But he was scared enough to smell different. When you're scared, your body secretes a sweat that smells differently. You can smell fear. Even if you don't consciously know it, you may still be partially scared. And that scared may come up with things like, I'm going to teach them a lesson, or these people aren't going to push me around. And I'm not suggesting anything you need to do about it, but why don't you try this? When you're next in that setting, go in there, don't say anything. Let somebody else say the first thing, and soften your voice considerably, and ask people about themselves before they ask you about you, and start a conversation about them and see what happens.
Well, usually that's not the issue. I mean, like, it's pretty, like, random. It's like I was the new kid in school, or, like, some other new person joined our class or something like that. But what I'm talking about, because I am not a person who gets in fights, I, well, like, this whole bullying thing, I put up with this bully, I'm 36 years old,
yep.
And he's 22. I put up with him for 8 weeks, and the only thing I did was he was, like, shoving on me, and I just touched his forehead, and oh, my God, him and all his friends about erupted for a full week and raised a whole ruckus, and it's not like they don't know that I study martial arts. It's because other kids have said, oh, yeah, did you hear she just silvered in competitions? I don't bring it up.
Okay, number one, you're in competitions. There's two things against you. One, you're in competitions, and two, you're a woman. Those are two major things. Don't tell anybody you win competitions, and you can't change your gender, so you've got to be... You got to put up with those sort of people or find different friends.
Hey, Rachel, I want to thank you so much for your call. That was absolutely great. And, you know, you call a psychoanalyst, this is the sort of thing you're going to get as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Yes, it's Talk of Alaska, and we're with Dr. Stuart Twemlow, and he's an expert on bullying, but he would just as soon get rid of the whole word bullying. It turns out bullies used to be the defenders. Now they're not. So maybe we need a new word. And he's also brought up this fascinating idea that, you know, there could be some people who are just sort of beyond repair. They really shouldn't even be in the school. and there's just a problem. The school's not good for them. They're not good for the school. It's fascinating. Let's go to John. Joins the program from Eagle River. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, John.
Oh, hi there. You know, this is such a complex topic, and I really appreciate the doctor bringing up that it is very complicated. It seems to me bullying, you know, if you go back to Theodore Roosevelt, they had the bully boys.
Yeah.
And it all seemed as very positive. They were protectors and defenders of the national persona. But it, basically, bullies are intimidators. And they do it psychologically, which in the doctor made reference to it happening in high school being the worst kind, as the psychological aspect of bullying probably is more serious than the physical. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, there seems to be a real emphasis on maybe victim is not the right word, but the sort of the recipient of the bully's attention.
People call them targets. They like that word. Yeah.
Sure. Two areas I'd just like to bring up as part of the conversation. I'm not sure they're actually questions, but I'd like to have the conversation sort of incorporate them. One is there seems to be a lot of emphasis through the use of martial arts on the targets, and I'm wondering if it's not just something that increases their self-esteem, if other types of physical activity, athleticism, or other kinds of things that improves their image of themselves as productive and worthy people,
mm-hmm.
and martial arts is simply one way of doing that.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to include that is because I don't want to, all of a sudden everybody says, well, if I don't go into martial arts, I'm not going to benefit.
No. You're absolutely right. Actually, martial arts, I think, benefits very young children. But by middle school, they're more interested in sports and high school, intellectual things. I actually saw a school where the main practice of that type was around chess because one of the teachers was a chess master. It's really a hook. To learn not to be a bully. Yeah.
It seems to me anything that increases self-esteem
yep.
is a good thing.
Yep.
And it seems to me that bullies are probably at the low end of the scale on self-esteem, and one of they feed their self-esteem, if you want to call it that, is by bullying it because it makes them seem mm-hmm. like they're more important people. And so maybe something could be done for the bully that they could find other more productive, positive ways of increasing their self-esteem. Possibly through the same kind of techniques that you're suggesting that would go towards the target.
How about high school bowling teams?
The bowling.
Bowling. Listen. We've missed the boat. All the bowling alleys are empty when kids are in school. It's not a high school sport. People who aren't intellectually superior often are their best bowlers, and there's a sense of teamwork going on mm-hmm. there. You know, how about we fill the bowling alleys up with high school kids?
I'm loving it.
One of the things, to back to your question, was I think that what happens in a school that's successful, if you follow them through a period of, say, 5 years, the bullies become changed by the culture of the school. I remember vividly a school bully who was the son of a Crips gang member, picked up every day from school by Lucifer, tattooed from head to toe, who's the hitman for the gang. And he was a big boy. He'd been humping the school trophy case, and he was about to be expelled. We got him into the system, and he became one of the main helpers. Excuse me. And I saw him standing by a kindergarten kid who was crying because he couldn't tie his shoelaces. And he did look around, but he helped the kid tie his shoelaces. Now, that was the beginning of the change of that kid, who was a very bad bully. By the time he finished, he was one of the big helpers. He was one of the altruistic bystanders. He was one of the kids you came to with a problem. He had leadership skills, but he didn't have the skills necessary to know how his leadership was driving people away from him.
That is a great observation. I want to get to one more. John, thank you for your call. I want to get down Kathy on here from Anchorage. Kathy, you're on Talk of Alaska with Dr. Twimlow.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Just got about a minute.
Okay, well, we moved here recently to Anchorage from a school system that had a guidance counselor that was in a K through 5 school in all the classrooms, and I guess this speaks to that building the social community and the culture, not just talking about bullying, but talking about friendship skills.
Exactly.
And I'm wondering if that could be a push for different school systems across the country.
That's a very good idea.
Speak to that cooperative games, part of the curriculum, that kids have to work together that are different from each other and building those kind of skills.
Yep. And call them friends.
I'm glad that they don't have it here.
Yeah. I always say, people ask me, what about teasing? Isn't that part of normal childhood? And my advice to people is this: if you have to tease, only tease your friends, because they're the only ones who will actually understand it.
Well, and the guidance counselor at the school we came from would actually put out a worksheet and for parents and families, and that was on one of the topics, teasing and how to deal with it, how it's not appropriate. So I guess there's a place for that kind of thing at your
I believe there is.
I want to thank you very much for your call, Kathy and Dr. Twimlow. You know, I think that what I'd never heard before was this business of taking those minutes at the end of the day to reflect. That's something.
And that's something schools can do easily.
Yeah. And here it is. You already have the template. Okay, am I a helper? Am I in the crowd?
Did I do some bullying today? Because we all do it.
And they just, you got some time at the end of the school day, and you just think about it.
And you know what? Children are much harder on themselves than teachers would be.
Well, thank you very much for being with us, Dennis Maloney.
Thank you.
Yes, and
so good to be here with Steve.
This evening, the program at East High School at 7 o'clock with these experts. And I want to thank Dave Waldron at the controls, Kristen Spack, B.D. Trantina, and Ellen Locke here. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Working late? Hear Alaska News nightly at any time of the day on the web at www.aprn.org. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.